The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Steve, as a former federal prosecutor and public defender, whether it's a witness for the defense or prosecution, when they change their story once, you've landed a blow against credibility in front of the jury. And here the jury is the American public and the world, because the witness is President Biden. And he hasn't changed his story once or twice or three times. It's at least four times, thanks to the dogged pressure and questioning from your White House reporter pool. The White House has been forced to address this issue. And here's the kicker. If the FBI and DOJ knew for certainty that Joe Biden had absolutely nothing to do with Hunter Biden and China and Ukraine and Burisma and all that other stuff, they would have definitively come out and said so. They have been deafeningly silent since all the whistleblower testimony has come in, the documents have surfaced. Joe Biden's got a real problem here, and his White House is lying to the world.
Look, the walls are closing in. First, you had the bank records that show that the money was being transferred. Now you have the testimony of business partners. Devin Archer is one, there are going to be others. And other than Joe Biden himself, Devin Archer is Hunter Biden's most important business partner. When Hunter Biden joined the Burisma board, Devin Archer got a seat on the board as well. When Hunter Biden got that sweetheart deal with that Chinese private equity fund and got put on the board, Devin Archer got the same slot. So he knows where everything is. And it's going to be very, very hard for the Democrats on this committee to do what they did with the whistleblowers, which is argue Joe Biden played no role. The evidence is there, and their defenses keep shifting. And I think Joe Biden is in serious trouble.
That's Kash Patel, and then there, Peter Schweizer. They know all about the Biden crime family, the bribery scheme, all of these details being revealed by the day, it seems. And the walls, as he pointed out there, They've said for years that the walls are closing in on Trump, but the walls do seem to be closing in on the Biden crime family. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this, Tuesday? I think it's Tuesday afternoon. We're nearing the end of July. We've got some big announcements for August coming up here in just a moment. First, though, you can get to the live video stream of this show at our website, TrumpetDaily.com. Just go to TrumpetDaily.com. You can watch the live stream every weekday morning here in the Central Time Zone of the United States at 11:05 a.m. You can also get to our live stream over at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble and search for the Trumpet Daily. You can watch the live stream there, or you can watch the show after the fact on either website, Rumble or TrumpetDaily.com. So, next week, some of you know that we have a Saturday broadcast. We usually run Friday's show on the Saturday broadcast of Live from America, LFA it's called, on Rumble. He's, I forget the name of the owner there that runs the, his first name's Jeremy, I know that. But he runs the channel. He likes our show on Saturday, so we've completed an agreement with him to run the show on his channel every weekday evening. So the show that we have here live at 11 a.m., we'll then tidy that up and edit a few things and then send it off to him. And then it plays on his Rumble channel Monday through Friday. I believe it's 8 p.m. Central Time Zone. I'll have to look into that. I'll give you more details. It doesn't start until next week, but it does expose this show to a pretty nice-sized audience. So we'll give you more updates as to the details of that. We're still going to broadcast one of our shows or replay it on Saturday morning as well, since that's been getting quite a good response. So LFA will not have it live, but they will be showing a program on the same day. And this is one thing that we've really struggled to find anywhere, even in just looking at an obscure little TV station somewhere. because they always want like 2 or 3 days in advance to review the program and then play it and so on. And we've been looking for a channel that will just show the show on the same day at the very least, just because we do cover so many subjects that are timely for that particular day. So anyway, we're excited about that opportunity. And also, we've got an encore performance of Celtic Throne coming up on Sunday afternoon, August 20. Just go to CelticThrone.com. I didn't check it this morning. I'm not sure if it's already posted. It probably is. Go to CelticThrone.com and you can see the August 20th performance. It'll be right here in Edmond, Oklahoma, in the beautiful Armstrong Auditorium. And then the very next day, in the same venue, that would be Armstrong Auditorium, we're going to have a lecture series brought to us by General Michael Flynn. He's going to be speaking here on the Edmond campus, or at the Edmond campus, on August 21st. That's Monday evening. That engagement is set for 6 p.m., and we're still organizing the activities for that night. So there may be some other things that we include with the program. But as it is right now, Mr. Flynn's probably going to be giving like a 45-minute lecture, followed by a Q&A session. So that, too, will be available at one of our websites. Again, all of this is happening just in the last day or two. So we'll have more details as they roll out and let you know in case you want to make it into Edmond. If you're anywhere near the headquarters campus for God's work, you can certainly make your way down to see that that show and also to hear General Flynn speak. So lots to get to today. Thankfully, I'm surrounded by a lot of very diligent and smart people because I woke up a little later than I wanted to today. We had the counselor's breakfast. We had the forum for all of the boys here, a boys-only forum, although I guess there were a few girls that attended as well, a few female workers. The girl campers were out on their campout last night. So Mr. Hilliker, Joel Hilliker, had a forum especially for them, and then I had one especially for the fellas. So, and then I go to my office for 45 minutes, and I find that all of my researchers and news gatherers have sent me, as per usual, a nice pile of material. So I mentioned yesterday on the show, Devin Archer, Miranda Devine had the big reveal on what he was set to testify to. And then we find out now that he's, for the third time, he's pulled out of that congressional hearing. This is from PJ Media. It says, a Biden family business associate and President Joe Biden's son, Hunter's best friend in business, has canceled his scheduled appearance on Monday to give testimony before the House Oversight Committee. For the third time, he's canceled. Why? Why would a business associate of Hunter Biden's, of Joe Biden's, why would he cancel his testimony? What does he have to hide? Well, as you know, the Biden crime family has a lot to hide. And as I covered with you yesterday, this is a man who's been threatened. His life has been threatened. He's been told to keep his mouth shut about all of his business dealings, about all of his knowledge regarding the big guy listening in on the family business discussions, listening in to all of these foreign nationals as they were working with Hunter Biden, making sure that the big guy established policy that was favorable to their company or their country. It says here, James Comer, the chairman of the committee, spoke with Fox and stated that Devin Archer canceled the deposition he was scheduled to participate in before the committee. Archer is currently under a subpoena from the committee, but has now backed out three times, three different times. A person who is close to the expected testimony from Archer told the news outlet, Breitbart, that the date when he is to appear before the committee is still in negotiations with his legal team. Reports have indicated that the committee is hoping to force him to deliver this testimony on July 31st. So that would be next Monday. again. You look at, you go back to that montage we just played there at the start. The walls are closing in on this crime family. Listen to Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday as she's asked to comment on this ever-changing story with respect to the big guy and his connections to Hunter Biden's business activity. Clip one.
So I've been asked this question a million times. The answer is not going to change. The answer remains the same. The president was never in business with his son. I just don't have anything else to add.
He was never in business with his son. Of course, Joe Biden, the big guy, for years said that he never even talked to Hunter about any of the business dealings. Never. You see how the story just keeps evolving. And of course, she's at a point now where she doesn't even want to add anything because the story has changed so many times. This is from Jesse Waters last night, clip seven.
What does it tell you now the White House is changing their defense strategy? It's no longer Joe didn't talk about business, is now Joe wasn't in business.
Yeah, we've been at this since 2018. They initially said there were no foreign deals. Then they shifted and said there might have been foreign deals, but the Bidens made no money. Then it became Joe Biden didn't know about any of the deals. Then it became Joe Biden didn't participate in any of the deals. And now it's that he was not in business with his son. Look, the implications for this are huge, Jesse. If you look at that 1023 form that the FBI released, if that document is true, that document reveals that one of the people that was at those meetings that heard the conversations about bribing the Bidens worked for President Zelensky. Who really wants to believe, if that meeting took place and that document is accurate, that that individual did not go and report to President Zelensky what he heard? And again, if that document is true, who wants to believe that President Zelensky and his administration have not used that as leverage over Joe Biden when it comes to negotiations on Ukraine policy?
These people are so deep into the corruption, and it's getting to the point where they can't really cover it up anymore. Because it's just the truth is leaking out day after day after day. If Devin Archer has to testify on Monday, as I was saying on yesterday's show, I mean, evidently we already know what his testimony is to some degree. Miranda Devine has covered that over at the New York Post. But look at how the story has evolved. You might remember the shakedown call. Hunter's on the phone with the foreign national from China. And he's basically there saying, hey, my dad's right here. You better pay up. This is from Fox News. It says, during the July 30, 2017 discussion, as I was saying yesterday, I mean, so much of this evidence now that's pouring forth, I mean, it's giving you the date, the time, who was there, who witnessed it. There's evidence all over the place. Never mind what the regime media says about the 1023. It's not corroborated. Now it's important for everything to be corroborated. In fact, it has been corroborated. It mirrors what so many others have said, just like Jonathan Turley said in one of those clips we played the other day. This is the phone call date, July 30, 2017, when Hunter Biden told Zhao, I'm sitting here with my father, and we would like to understand why the commitment made has not been fulfilled. Why has this not been fulfilled? And this was brought forth by the IRS whistleblower. Well, the day he made that phone call, Hunter is pictured in his father's Corvette with a couple of women, whether they're family members or prostitutes or whatever. I guess that's unclear. But he was there. He was there at the Biden residence. So again, the walls closing in. People came out and said, well, he might have just been, you know, bluster. It might have just been bluster. We don't know if his dad was actually there, but the evidence, and again, the intel community, you mean to tell me the security state couldn't find this out if it really wanted to? Just by tracking cell phone data. Pictured in the father's Corvette on the day that he made the shakedown call. His dad was there. He was telling the truth. Just believe what he says. Here's another one from Margot Cleveland. She's writing here about the 1023 and how that so much of this FBI document has in fact been corroborated. As I say, never mind what the propagandists in the media are out there saying or implying from the Federalist. It says, when the Pittsburgh FBI office briefed the Delaware U.S. Attorney's Office on evidence implicating Hunter and Joe Biden in a bribery scheme, the agents also told the Delaware team they had already corroborated several aspects of the confidential human sources claims. This is the source for that FBI document, the 1023, an individual familiar with the briefing told the Federalist. So the FBI knows. We've already heard. I mean, the true reporting on the CHS, the confidential human source, is that he's been a reliable FBI source for more than 10 years and has been paid more than six figures or into the six figures for his information. This is the source. And yet, look at how easy it is for the regime media to just dismiss this, to just shove it aside. I thought this story was pretty hilarious. It doesn't tie in directly with all these crimes, but it certainly fits the family. This is the New York Post. Biden's dog, Commander, sent Secret Service officer to a hospital, bit six others after replacing first pooch Major. I mean, the Bidens own a vicious dog. We'll break the news here on the Trumpet Daily. The Bidens' German Shepherd has injured more police officers than the January 6 protesters did. How about that? How about that for a little breaking news? There should be a committee. A congressional committee should be investigating this. A German Shepherd that's just biting all of these Secret Service off sent one to the hospital. How did this story stay covered up for as long as it did? It says, I'll try not to laugh, sorry. I mean, it is serious. Nobody wants to get bit by a dog. My dog playfully snips at people from time to time. So it's something that you've got to watch as a dog owner. But six, seven times? Sending a guy to the hospital? Can't make this up. President Biden's nearly two-year-old German Shepherd, Commander, bit seven people in a four-month period after former first dog, Major, was ousted from the White House over similar aggressive behavior. They, for whatever reason, they can't seem to get an obedient dog at the White House. In the Biden crime family, they can't seem to have just a peaceable dog. A dog that just adds life and humor and levity to the situation each night. Here he is, biting all the Secret Service officers. Well, look at what the Bidens are getting away with. I mean, this is unbelievable. It's like everything that this family, it's just like Obama said about it. Now, Obama's the puppet master. We know that Obama's carrying out his fundamental transformation through the puppet. But you know what he said. It was profanity-laced, but you know what he said about what he really thinks about Joe Biden, how he messes everything up. He can't even get his dog to behave. Forget about his son. Forget about his family, his brother. These people, it says here at the New York Post, the shocking spate of incidents involving Commander, none of them previously known. Just like with everything, here the regime media, they even cover up the fact that the Bidens have a vicious dog. Well, two of them. They've had two vicious dogs. It says mirror attacks involving Major, who the White House says was given to family friends after biting many Secret Service members in 2021. Anyhow, I guess they can't afford to send their dog off to dog training school. I don't know what the problem is here, but what a weird and bizarre story. And then to cover this up as well, really? It says here, in the most serious documented incident involving Commander, the White House Physician's Office on November 3rd, 2022, referred a bitten Secret Service uniformed officer to a local hospital for treatment after the dog clamped down on their arm and thigh and the arm. I mean, this is an attack. This is a dog attack. I mean, it seems like they're going to need to put him down. He's dangerous. Vicious, violent, clamped down on the arm and the thigh. Records show Commander broke the skin of a different Secret Service member's hand and arm weeks later after the president unleashed him. What a word. Unleashed him outside the White House following a family movie night. The movie's over. Let's turn the dog loose on the White House grounds. And then he goes around biting all the Secret Service officers. So there you go. There you go. Never mind any of this, though. Trump, look at Trump. Look at the evidence they're mounting against Trump. Forget about the Biden crime family or their vicious dog. Just think about Trump. All things Trump. Look at how much damage Trump has caused. Look at how much evil Trump gets away with. Look at all of the sins and the lawlessness in Trump's family. They make it up. Listen to this from MSNBC, clip two.
But I think a lot could change in the next 2 weeks once we see an indictment. Jack Smith is sitting on a mountain of evidence, far more than we learned during the January 6th committee, the congressional committee's report.
A ton of evidence. Oh, Jack Smith. Trump has finally met his match, as you heard yesterday. That's right. That's right. In fact, Trump actually wants the indictment. Yeah, he's eager to go off to the slammer, evidently, according to one expert analyst, a judge, in fact. We played that clip for you yesterday. And with each indictment, you see Trump's popularity just continue to increase. It's soaring, in fact. This is from The Hill. It says Republican senators who don't want to see President Donald Trump as their party's nominee are feeling increasingly anxious that special counsel Jack Smith is actually helping Trump's presidential campaign through his dogged pursuit of the former president. It's not working. You know what would slow down Donald Trump? If you sent the Biden dog down to Mar-a-Lago, that actually might slow down the Trump re-election campaign. The indictments aren't working, though. His poll numbers are surging. It says here, the worry that Smith's effect on the Republican presidential primary is being magnified by prominent House Republicans and conservative media personalities who have rallied behind Trump, effectively blotting out the rest of the GOP presidential field. They're just being blotted out. Ron DeSantis, recovering from his car accident yesterday, I mean, that pretty much typifies his run for president. But his numbers are plummeting. Listen to this montage. These are Republican losers saying that Donald Trump is a loser. Clip three.
And the Washington Post published a piece that really stuck out to me about how intertwined Donald Trump's campaign has become with his legal defense. According to the piece, just over half of the money he raised last quarter went to an affiliated PAC that is footing his legal bills. But is this campaign becoming increasingly about keeping him out of prison? And how is that even allowed for him to use so much of that money for his own legal defense?
Well, I mean, I'm a little frustrated at this point in time that, as I said a moment ago, nobody's really getting traction. So Trump is at 50% in most polls, and most of the other folks, and I think there are 12 candidates, really capable, good candidates, but they're not getting much attention. And I'm hoping that someone will rise up and become a candidate that I can get excited about and get behind, somebody that maybe has a more hopeful, positive message that can take the party in a different direction. But as we sit here today, I can't tell you who that is going to be.
I have said it very clearly that we need a new generational leader. We've got to leave this negativity behind. Are there problems in our
justice?
Would
you support him if he gets the nomination?
I would support him because I am not going to have a President Kamala Harris. We can't afford that. That is not going to happen. But I will tell you, you look at these indictments, there's probably going to be a fourth indictment. Right. We can't have, as Republicans, him as the nominee. He can't win a general election. That's the problem. We've got to go and have someone who can actually win.
Republican debate, it's just a month away. How far are you from reaching the 40,000 donor requirement?
Well, we make the polling requirement very easily, Dan. Mm-hmm. I'm very humbled at the support around the country, which is one of the criteria But yeah, having 40,000 individual donors, we're literally working around the clock. Got about a month to go. I'm confident that we'll be there. People every day are going to MikePence2024.com and donating even a dollar to get us on the stage. We're getting support all over the country.
How far along are you?
I couldn't be more grateful. We're making incredible progress toward that goal. We're not there yet, but then I promise you, when we know, you'll know.
And you'll make it.
We'll make it. I'll see you at that debate stage.
Mike Pence can't even get 40,000 people to donate a dollar. That's the threshold he's got to cross to qualify for the debates. He's the former vice president of the United States. And he's struggling, he's scrambling to get just 40,000 Americans in a nation of 330 million. 40,000, and here Nikki Haley is saying, we need someone who can win the general. Like you? Or like Mike Pence? Donald Trump pulled in 74 million votes, the most in history. Forget about the steal. There's no way Joe Biden got 81 million. There's no way they could have gotten 81 million without all the mail-in ballots and the mules and the machine glitches and everything else that they did. 74 million votes out in front of Barack Obama by a mile. And here they are saying, we need someone who can win the general. Say these people that are hovering around 4 to 5%. And here Donald Trump is surging in the polls. Now, again, I suppose in some ways they have to say that because they're running against him. There's no way he can win. And so they don't really believe that. Or if they do, they're delusional. The reason the indictments keep coming is because the communists believe that he actually can and will win. That's why their last option here is to try to put him in jail. Or to prevent him from even being on the ticket. He's a criminal. Hey, all these indictments. Even the Republican candidates, they're referring to the indictments. The Uniparty. It's all about just anybody but Trump. Even if it's a crime family with a vicious dog that's attacking police officers, that's putting police officers in the hospital. Go ahead and keep that. That's fine. But leave that there. As long as the bad orange man doesn't come back, it really and truly is a swamp. It really and truly is a deep, deep state. And, of course, they fear Donald Trump coming back and cleaning house. I mean, he's even been more humble than what we're used to, at least with respect to decisions and appointments and people that he trusted. That then turned and stabbed him in the back. He knows. Now he knows who the patriots are and the ones that they just want the status quo. Where, as I said yesterday, where are the articles of impeachment? Given what Devin Archer is prepared to testify, assuming he even makes it, assuming he's even alive by the time that congressional hearing happens, where are the articles of impeachment? There's a few in the House calling for it. What about Mitch McConnell? Where are the senators? Where are the senators that are so quick to say Donald Trump should have been more forceful on January 6th? He should have spoke sooner on January 6th. Where are they with respect to the Biden bribery scheme? What have they said about it? You know, you look at the story with respect to the Sound of Freedom and the pedophilia, them trying to normalize pedophilia. A lot of voices in this society, man, this is a sick, sick world we're living in. And so many people they just kind of brush these things aside. And then they talk to you as if there's a ton of evidence, a ton, that Donald Trump moved boxes or whatever the latest indictment will say. This is from Colin Rugg as a tweet. It's based upon a New York Post story. Former ABC News producer James Gordon Meek, has pleaded guilty to transporting and possessing child sexual abuse material. Meek once bragged about raping a toddler girl. He made a plea deal. He's probably going to get a few years in jail. He's a member of the media. He was part of the regime media. Prominent individual, well known, produced several documentaries and such. Enters into a plea deal. Bragged once about raping a toddler girl. I was telling the campers this morning, the fellas, just how we're saturated in pornographic filth. And people that consume these kinds of things. I mean, once you go down that road, it's a slippery slope. Here's a pedophile, a rapist, and he's working at ABC. Have you heard about this story? You've probably heard the talking heads speak about Sound of Freedom and how that's QAnon. And how there's conspiracy theories that are kind of woven into that script. And, you know, Jim Caviezel and the main guy, the former DHS guy that the story is built around, Tim Ballard, I think is his name. They're Trumpers, they're QAnon. So this movie, I mean, we need to attack the movie. But this ABC producer that bragged about raping little girls, well, we're not going to really turn that into a national story. Investigators found disturbing messages on Meek's phone where he bragged about raping a toddler. It says here, this is from Colin Rugg, it's interesting how the media is more upset about the Sound of Freedom than this. Meek's expected to face much less than a maximum 20 years in prison after entering into a plea agreement. He texted someone, "Have you ever raped a toddler girl? It's amazing." Can you believe this? How disgusting, how perverse this is. And this guy probably goes to jail for 4, maybe 5 years, if that. But the Sound of Freedom, you need to know that the Sound of Freedom, that's QAnon. Well, people are going to see the Sound of Freedom anyways. I think as of yesterday, it was at $125 million. It's not going to make as much as Barbie, unfortunately. Evidently, a lot of people really want to go see Barbie. They really want to go see an attack on men for 2 hours. 2 hours of propaganda. And don't you dare criticize this film like Ben Shapiro did, or they gang tackle him. 2 hours think of it, a message for 2 hours that says men are bad, they're horrible, they shouldn't lead. Let's just let the Barbie run the world. Upside down. Donald Trump, by the way, he had a screening of Sound of Freedom at his estate in New Jersey. Had the actor there with him, praised the film. That little 2-minute clip went viral. And of course, he gets attacked for supporting the conspiracy. There he is, Donald Trump with Jim Caviezel. There he is speaking out against pedophilia, speaking out against child sex trafficking. But QAnon, Donald Trump. This is from the Washington Post. Many critics, this is a guy named Noah Berlatsky. Okay, I'll talk more about him in a second. But first, his op-ed piece. It's at the Washington Post. Many critics have linked Sound of Freedom to the pro-Trump QAnon conspiracy cult. They've also been startled by its mainstream success. But the truth is that the conspiratorial right and the Hollywood default aren't that different, which is why perhaps our polity has had such difficulty rejecting QAnon, Trump, and fascism. The film is controversial because the man the movie is about, former Homeland Security operative Tim Ballard, and the actor who plays him, Jim Caviezel, both have links to QAnon. Whatever QAnon is, they've got links, you see, to QAnon. So anybody with links to QAnon, that discredits the whole operation, the whole project, the movie. As I said a week or two ago, think about all of the perverted actors and producers and directors with links to who knows what. That's still, they produce the filth, and Americans consume it by the millions. It says, so is the Sound of Freedom a QAnon dog whistle, or is it just another thriller The answer is that whatever the filmmaker's intentions, it functions as both. It's a QAnon dog whistle and a thriller. Functions as both, says this guy. It didn't take a few astute observers on social media to find out a little bit more about the background of this op-ed writer, Noah Berlatsky. He's the director of communications for a group called Protasia. Protasia. You can look online and read about the Protasia Foundation. It says it's a support group for victims of child abuse, but really, it's more of a defense of pedophiles. This is from the foundation website. Minor attracted persons, they use that, MAPs, because, you know, they don't want to say pedophile. I mean, that sounds like it's really evil. It's more of a minor attracted person. Someone who's attracted to minors, kind of like the ABC producer. MAPs are the target of social and legal censure. They are hated and despised. Often they hate and despise themselves. Pedophiles, they're talking about. It says some hope that the stigma and censure directed at MAPs, pedophiles, will protect children by isolating MAPs and indeed by making them afraid of themselves and what they might do. However, some researchers believe that instilling self-loathing in MAPs reduces their self-control and makes them more likely to harm. In other words, treat the pedophiles nicely. That's what this guy is saying. This is the author of that op-ed that appeared in the Washington Post. I mean, the Post is right up there with the New York Times, the paper of record. They too, both of them, established the narrative of the day for the regime media. Here comes the New York Times bringing this guy, of all people, Noah Berlatsky, the pedophile apologist. He produces the op-ed that says, yeah, you know, Sound of Freedom, it really is a QAnon conspiracy movie. That's right. Isaiah 1 says that the head is sick and the sickness goes from head to toe. And yet these people that would rise in defense, really, of pedophilia, certainly if Donald Trump is in opposition to it, well, you've got to at least have a soft spot for the so-called MAPs. Listen to Trump, by the way. This is a blast from the past. Clip 8.
At the cross of the theory is this belief that you are secretly saving the world from this satanic cult of pedophiles and cannibals. Does that sound like something you are behind?
Or? Well, I haven't heard that, but is that supposed to be a bad thing or a good thing? I mean, you know, if I can help save the world from problems, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to put myself out there.
Once again, he's on the right side of the argument. This woman, the reporter, says, now QAnon thinks that, you know, there's this conspiracy, there's pedophilia and cannibalism that's going on, and Trump's response, well, if I can fight against those things, is that a bad thing? To fight against pedophilia and cannibalism? He's there saying, I don't know what QAnon is or what they stand for, but it seems like we could all agree that to fight against pedophilia makes good sense. It should be one thing that we're all in agreement on, right? Well, not as much today. Look at how fast we're descending into this cesspool of disgusting behavior. I mean, even to talk about a pedophile who bragged about raping a teenage girl and he's going off to prison perhaps for 3-4 years. Listen again to Donald Trump, again, vowing to fight these pedophile rings. This is clip 9.
Let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true and that disavow QAnon in its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that.
I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard, but I know nothing about it.
They believe it is a satanic cult run by the deep state.
Study the subject. I'll tell you what I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia, and I agree with that. I mean, I do agree with that, and I agree with
it. But it's not a satanic pedophile cult.
I have no idea. I know nothing about
that. You don't know that? Okay.
No, I don't know.
You just this week.
Do you know that?
Okay.
One day, these commentators, well, you would hope anyway, that they would just listen to the positions that they stood for, the questions that they asked of the bad orange man. He's just speaking common sense, right? I don't know anything about this group, but look, if they're against pedophilia, I am too. I am too. I mean, that should be obvious. But we're at a point where everything is up for debate. And 99.9% of the time, Donald Trump is on one side. They're all going to rush to the other side. It's a uniparty, for sure. It's a communist infiltration of the United States of America, of the Israelite nations in these last days. America under attack. He was right. The communist infiltration was prophesied. Call our operators today and request those pieces of literature, that book, that brochure. The number is 1-866-930-3024. Operators are standing by. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Yesterday, we very nearly got into Psalm 78. I took you through Psalm 23 to begin with, just emphasizing the importance of looking to God as our shepherd or our guide, as it says there at the top of Psalm 78. Looking to God for guidance. We also just emphasized the importance of remembering our spiritual memory. It says there in Malachi 4, this is verse 4, "Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments." My father, in Malachi's message, he emphasizes the point that Horeb is where Mount Sinai, it's where it all began for the Israelites of old. This was their start. This was their mustard seed beginning. This is where God really drew attention to his law, his government. And he says here in Malachi 4, now, remember that history. Remember even what led up to it. Remember all of the miraculous interventions on my part to release you from captivity. Remember the parting of the Red Sea miracle. Remember how I submerged the Egyptian army under the Red Sea. Under that wall of water, after you were led to safety. Remember those miracles. God led ancient Israel through the wilderness in spite of themselves. They were constantly complaining, grumbling, criticizing, murmuring. God actually rained food from heaven, and that didn't make them happy. No, they said, well, how come we don't get to eat flesh like we did in Egypt? Imagine these stunning miracles happening every day. and yet being in a state of constant dissatisfaction, misery, suffering, all brought on by yourself. Today, of course, you see spiritual Israel. So many of them have fallen away from the truth. They have forgotten the truth. They haven't remembered. And they have gotten into or settled into an attitude that is very similar to the Israelites of old. And it's even more inexcusable today because these are people that had the Spirit of God. The ancient nation of Israel, they didn't have God's Spirit. Moses said, oh, if they only had a heart to obey, they didn't have that heart. They weren't converted. The leaders were. Moses was, but the ancient Israelites were not. It was just a letter of the law approach. They didn't have the heart that David had, that Moses had. They didn't have a soft and pliable heart. And you see it in the way that they reacted to God's teachings. You see it in the way they reacted to difficult situations and circumstances. It was a cycle of sin for so many generations. They'd cry out to God for help and for deliverance, and God would help them, guide them, deliver them. And then when times were somewhat good and there was peace and safety all around, then they became complacent and they turned to sin again and again and again. God says here, this is Psalm 78, verse 1, it says, give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable, it says. I will utter dark sayings of old. Verse 3 says, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. Verse 4, we will not hide them from our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Eternal and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. See, God repeatedly told the Israelites, the parents, to teach their children about Israel's history with God, to teach their children about the miracles of deliverance, the miraculous hand of God, the mighty works that God performed. I mean, you put yourself in the position of those parents. They didn't have Bibles that they could study. I mean, they had written communications, I'm sure, and parchments with bits and pieces of this or that. But not the Bible in the sense that we have it today. You know, all that's been collected, miraculously, I might add, by something like 40 different authors, preserved by the Jews. And we have it today, and it's so easy to take it for granted. It's so easy to not use it the way that we should. But imagine how much more important it would have been back in the days of the Israelites of old to just constantly talk to your children about God, about the things of God, about the miracles of God. Read Deuteronomy 6 and Deuteronomy 11, or this Psalm, Psalm 78, and see how important it is for young people to be taught by their parents. I was going through content from The Missing Dimension in Sex with our teenage boys this morning, 13 to 18 years of age, saying that hopefully, you know, your parents are really reinforcing this at home. But, you know, you need to hear it here at SEP as well. The way God thinks about His creation, the way He designed the human body to work, the things we're to refrain from and not do as we save ourselves for marriage and family, in the sexual sense, I mean. You know, just basics that any father, any mother ought to be able to sit down with their 11 or 12-year-old and say, listen, this is what you need to know. You need to know this heading into puberty. This is what happens. So many children today, they're just left alone. The proverb says a child left to himself brings shame to the family. It brings shame upon the mother. We have to teach. You look into Leviticus, you look into Deuteronomy, some of the things that that Moses spoke to the Israelites about. I mean, there were millions of them in the wilderness. And he's telling them things about hygiene and puberty and what happens when this if you withdraw from the camp to just keep things clean and so on. He was very open and straightforward with the family of Israel. And so should we be with our children. You don't, like Missing Dimension says, you don't want to turn him over to the gutter and let him acquire all of that knowledge about sex and whatever else from the gutter. You don't do that as a loving parent. You turn them to the Bible. You show them what the Bible says about any given topic. God says here through this author, Asaph, the author of this psalm, that look at God's intervention, his timely intervention, all of the Red Sea moments that we've experienced, never forget it. I mean, remember it. Make note of it. Be reminded of it. We had a question the other night. It was at the, the Speed Fellowship. And all the young people, they were told to go to their various circles, and you're with a small group, and the host for the evening said, all right, now tell your group about just a stunning miracle that happened during your youth, during your upbringing, involving your family, or whatever it might be. And so it was wonderful just to hear the circle, everyone talking about, when I was seven, I had this debilitating whatever, and God intervened. I was anointed. God intervened. I've been healthy in that area ever since. Or God worked this out. He miraculously protected our family when we were in this precarious situation. And I was just telling them the next day how important it is to even write down some of those miraculous events so that we don't forget them. I grew up in the church. I can remember, I probably have forgotten quite a few, but I can remember several instances where I just knew God intervened in my life. And that really helped to convict me. As a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old, seeing that God was actually concerned about me, I couldn't really get over that. Really? He's interested in what I'm doing? He certainly is. He certainly is. There's so many examples in the Bible where he looks to, worked through youths. David, Samuel, Jeremiah, Timothy. God wants to get involved in your life as soon as possible. And this is why parents, teachers are so important. I was telling the students the other day, I mean, we're here on this beautiful campus. We have all of these unbelievable facilities, and we're adding more to the mix, it seems, every year. And they show up for 3 weeks. They look around at this glorious campus with all the ball fields and the facilities and the dorms and everything that they're able to enjoy. And I was just telling them, you go back 23 years, though, I mean, even just purchasing the first little plot of land on which is the auditorium and the hall of administration, the owner of that, when Tim Thompson, the late Tim Thompson, went up to him and said, hey, have you ever thought about selling this land or part of your land? He said, no, absolutely not. Certainly not the part where the pond is. That's where my kids grew up. That's where they built forts when they were little tykes. I'm not going to let go of that land. He asked him, he developed a relationship. He asked him on four separate occasions, no, I'm not going to sell. But he started to soften over time. Mr. Thompson tried to give him the grand vision for the property. And he said, you know what? If you sell us that choice section where the pond is, we'll name it after you. And he really, I mean, that really made him emotional. Sperlin Lake. And eventually, obviously, he said, all right, I'll sell it. And then we were able to buy 120 more acres just north of it, adjacent to it. I mean, just little things like that. I mean, miracles along the way. There have been so many, and we don't want to forget them. That's what God said to the Israelites of old. Make sure that you remind that your children weren't there when all those miracles happened. Make sure that you tell them about it. Make sure that you tell them about the great and living God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at
TrumpetDailyProgram@thetrumpet.com.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.